Welcome to this podcast for the months of March and April. The evenings are beginning to draw out quickly. At the beginning of March it gets dark just after 7 p.m, and by the end of April not until after 10 p.m. Typically this time of year is reasonably dry, so a good time for stargazing. As usual, we will start by turning to face the south. The stars we will look at in this session are due south just after dark at the beginning of March, although some of them will be fading into the evening twilight in the west by late April. We shall be looking for the winter hexagon. This is a similar idea to the summer triangle, where some of the brightest stars in the sky form a recognisable shape, or asterism, that stargazers can use to find their way around the sky. We shall meet some of our nearest neighbours in the galaxy, and also learn how to find seven constellations. All of the stars in the hexagon are around or part of the brilliant constellation of Orion, the Hunter. It's high in the sky at this time of year, and just to the left, or east, of the Milky Way in the south. You will find that Orion can be used as a pointer to most of the stars in the hexagon, so it's helpful to familiarise yourself with that constellation. The bit of Orion that most people instantly recognise is the Belt, which is comprised of three white stars in a line. Betelgeuse, the lovely orange-coloured star in the top left corner, is also very recognisable, and opposite it, in the lower right corner, is the bluish-white star called Rigel. That's where we'll start our tour. This blue supergiant is around 20 times heavier than our Sun, 70 times bigger, and blazing away with a luminosity that's tens of thousands of times brighter. It's a true giant. The light has taken about 860 years to reach us, and it's the most distant of the stars in the winter hexagon. The other stars are bright because they're so close, but Rigel appears bright because it is very luminous indeed. It gets its blue colour from its very high surface temperature of 12,500 degrees Celsius. Massive stars age quickly, and although it has an estimated age of under 10 million years, Rigel is a very mature star. This partly accounts for its large size, as it has exhausted its hydrogen fuel and swollen to become a giant. Owing to its high mass, Rigel is likely to end its days as a supernova. This is a star that collapses in on itself and then is destroyed in a huge explosion. All that will be left will be a tiny, extremely dense neutron star, or maybe even a black hole. We will work our way anti-clockwise around the hexagon, and our next star is the red giant in Taurus called Aldebaran. This star is easy to find. From Rigel it is up and to the right, or northeast. An imaginary line drawn from the star in the lower left corner of Orion, known as Safe, and passing through the leftmost star of Orion's belt, called Mintaka, extends up and passes very close to Aldebaran. Look for the chevron of stars that represent the head of Taurus the Bull pointing to the west. Aldebaran is the very bright orange star on the lower limb of the chevron. This star is bright because it's quite near at 65 light years, but also because it's over 5,000 times brighter than the Sun owing to its large size. Although the stars all seem to be fixed in position relative to each other, and in terms of human lifespans they are, they can in fact be seen to move if observed over centuries. Aldebaran, as it's relatively close, was one of the first that was seen to move. Astronomers in Greece had accurately recorded its position relative to the Moon in 509 CE. In 1781, Edmund Halley, the man that the comet is named after, observed that its position had changed, and in the past 2,000 years it has moved a distance equivalent to about a quarter of the width of the full Moon. In fact, all stars move like this, but it's much easier to observe it in those that are closer to the Sun. To find our next star, we need to go up to the constellation of Auriga the Charioteer. From Aldebaran, go up a bit more than the distance from Rigel. It's a bit to the left, or east of Aldebaran, and vertically above Rigel. Capella is the third brightest star in the northern sky, and just a bit brighter than Rigel. It's easy to recognise and has a little asterism of stars that form a small triangle just to its right. It's even closer than Aldebaran, at just under 50 light years. This star and the other stars in Auriga have been associated with goats since the days of ancient Mesopotamia, 4,000 years ago. And Capella gets its name from little goat in Latin. It is in fact not one star, but a complex system of four stars. But they're too close to see them as four, even in a telescope. The constellation of Auriga is quite easy to recognise, as most of its stars are quite bright. Capella is the brightest, and in the top right of a rather distorted pentangle of five stars. Auriga is popular with observers with telescopes, as being at the eastern edge of the Milky Way, it has many open star clusters to explore. Some of them you can just see with good binoculars as fuzzy patches. Capella is the top star in the winter hexagon. To find the next one, called Pollux, we need to go to your left, or east, and down to a point slightly higher than Aldebaran. We're looking for an obvious pair of prominent stars out on their own. Another popular way to find Pollux is to imagine a diagonal line, starting with Rigel in Orion, up and across through Betelgeuse, and keep going for about two times the distance between these stars, and you'll come to Pollux. The pair of stars are very recognisable and memorable. These represent the twins Castor and Pollux of Greek and Roman mythology that make the constellation of Gemini. The star we're looking for is the lower one, Pollux, which is just a bit brighter and slightly more yellow than the upper star called Castor. The constellation of Gemini spreads out to the west, these two stars being the heads of the twins. Admittedly, compared to Castor and Pollux, the remaining stars of the constellation are not very bright, but are fairly easy to see on a dark night. Pollux is close, as only 34 light-years away, and around 30 times brighter than the Sun, which explains why it appears to be so bright. The brightness of a star is very dependent on its size, and Pollux is about 9 times larger than the Sun, although only twice as heavy. In 2006, Pollux was found to have a very large planet orbiting it, over twice the size of Jupiter. It has been called Thestius. To date, well over 4,000 planets have been discovered orbiting other stars. While we're in this part of the sky, if you have a telescope, have a look at the upper star, Castor. With reasonably high magnification, you can see that Castor is a very obvious double star. In fact, there is a third star quite close by that is also part of the system, and astronomers have determined that all of these three stars are also double. That makes a complex six-star system. We will now move on to our next star called Procyon. This is in another constellation, the Lesser Dog or Canis Minor. We can again use Orion to guide us. Find the star in the top right of Orion. This is called Bellatrix. Now imagine a line in the sky that passes from Bellatrix through Betelgeuse in the top left of Orion. Keep on going about three times the distance and you'll come to Procyon. This is by far the brightest star in this part of the sky. In fact, Canis Minor only has one other star that's easily visible, just above and to the right of Procyon. All the other stars in the constellation are much dimmer and require a reasonably dark night to see. Procyon is also a double star, but it requires professional equipment to see its companion. Procyon gets its name from the Greek meaning before the dog. That's because it rises before Sirius, the dog star. We'll come to Sirius in a moment. Procyon is another very close star at only 11.5 light-years, and one of our nearest neighbours. It's 1.5 times heavier than our Sun, but much more mature and about twice the size and 7 times brighter. If you could travel to Procyon and look back at our solar system, you'd see the Sun as a star that was over 7.5 times dimmer than Procyon appears from the Earth. Within some tens of millions of years, Procyon is expected to enter the last phase of its life, as it will swell to become a red giant. Our own Sun will not be at that stage for about another 5 billion years. Our last, but by no means least star in the winter hexagon, is the magnificent Sirius. This star is really difficult to miss, as it flashes away like a cosmic diamond near to the horizon. It can also be found conveniently from Orion, by simply extending a line through the three stars of Orion's belt down to the east, and it passes almost through Sirius. We are now in the constellation of Canis Major, or the Greater Dog. Indeed, Sirius is also known as the Dog Star. Astronomers call the flashing scintillation. It's caused by starlight refraction through the disturbed layers of the Earth's atmosphere. Sirius displays it so well because the star is always low from the UK, and it's the brightest star in the sky. Its very name means scorching. Sirius is another close neighbour. It's only 8.6 light-years away, and is the seventh closest star to our solar system. Like a few of the other stars we've met in this session, Sirius is a double star. Its faint companion can just be seen in a telescope, but it requires a bit of experience as Sirius tends to drown it out. This companion is a type of star known by astronomers as a white dwarf. It's what's left of a star after it has swollen up into a red giant, then finally cast off its outer layers to end its days as a very hot but relatively tiny ball. It doesn't have any fuel left for nuclear reactions, so it is in effect a cinder of a star. But being small, it can only radiate heat quite slowly, so it will sit in its present form for billions and billions of years. The constellation of Canis Major is always very low from these latitudes, and Sirius is quite close to the top of it, so most of the other stars can only be seen when the constellation is at its highest or due exactly south from where you are observing. If you have a pair of binoculars, Sirius is well worth looking at, as then you'll get to see its full brilliance. If you also look just below the star, you may see an open cluster that is sometimes known as the Small Beehive Cluster. This is a cluster of around 100 stars that is about 25 light-years from us. It has a mixture of star types, including red giants and white dwarfs, although you need a good night and an open southerly horizon to see it well. The cluster sets before it's really dark by the middle of April, and it's at its best in March. So that is all the stars of the winter hexagon. We've had a quick tour of parts of Orion, Taurus, Auriga, Gemini, Canis Minor and Canis Major. If you practice following the path around the hexagon, it will quickly help you to learn the names of the stars and the positions of the constellations. Using an easy-to-find constellation like Orion as a signpost to other stars and constellations is a trick that all experienced observers use. It's surprising how quickly you can learn the patterns, and what at first glance seems like a jumble of dots soon becomes recognisable patterns. You may even find your own patterns. Such recognisable shapes are called asterisms, and they've helped stargazers to find their way around the night sky since the most ancient of times. Once you can recognise the constellations, you've taken the first steps to finding the deep sky gems such as clusters and nebulae that are hiding amongst them, and you'll be on your way to being a true stargazer. Keep practicing, thanks for listening, and keep looking up.